This podcast is made on Dharawal country, the unceded land of the Wadi Wadi people. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. Are you at a career crossroads and thinking about what's next for you? For career change tips, stories and resources, sign up to our newsletter or check out our new online courses at whatshedidnext.com.au.
When you close one door, another one will open, and it always does, particularly when you do something very purposefully, which I was doing. I was saying, okay, this is the message that I now want to share. I'm not going to stray from it. And it took a little while, but now I have a lot of work precisely because I made that decision.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of What She Did Next. I'm your host, Jackie Uwe. And this is a podcast where I talk to women about their inspiring career changes. What do you do when your dream career suddenly loses its shine? Do you give it up for something new or change the way you're doing it? If anyone had a dream career, it was Nina Karnakovsky. As a travel writer at the Sydney Morning Herald and later going freelance, she was off on adventurous travels a dozen times a year. But in 2019, she went on a trip that would change her forever and left her questioning her own lifestyle and career choices. Nina had come face to face with the devastating impacts of climate change and how the travel industry was contributing to the harm. Returning home from that trip, she started saying no to travel assignments coming her way and threw herself into learning everything she could about how to live and travel more sustainably. Nina has since reshaped her career to become a voice for sustainable travel, writing books, doing speaking gigs, and leading mindful travel expeditions. I loved chatting with Nina about her career transition and building a life with freedom at its core. She has tons of great tips for anyone wanting a more joyful and purposeful career. So please welcome, from the Northern Rivers region of New South Wales, Nina Karnakovsky. So Nina, you've had a pretty interesting career shift in recent years, which we will talk about, but I wanted to start with your first career in travel writing. We know that's a bit of a dream job in many people's eyes, so how did you find yourself working in that field?
Well, I had been a journalist by then in the lifestyle section of Fairfax magazines for about 5 years, and then a hallowed position came up on the travel team and I leapt at it. So it was quite a natural progression in that I had already been at the company for a little while. But when I started that job, I had a friend from university get in touch with me and say, ah, there you go, your dream came true. And I said, what are you talking about? And she reminded me that at university, I had apparently said in front of the whole lecture hall that I wanted to be the next Katrina Roundtree from Getaway.
Oh, right.
So I didn't even recall saying that, but it's an interesting kind of thought around making the things that we want in life happen, because sometimes we can put that out there and then kind of let it go. Mm. And it can become a reality just by having had it there in your thoughts, even though you haven't been tight gripping it and trying to make it happen.
Yes.
So when I started out, I mean, I was doing the trips that other people didn't necessarily want to do. I wanted to do, but they didn't. And then as time went on, I really developed my niche, which was the more kind of far-flung corners of the globe that were a bit more adventurous. A lot of the other writers wanted to go, say, to the US, or they wanted to go to Europe. I wasn't really interested in that. I wanted to go to Mongolia, Namibia, Papua New Guinea, all these sorts of places. I was really interested in looking at the lives of cultures that were just so far different than ours, and that really looked at the idea of what is a good life. Mm. And provided alternatives in that way for the traveler, because I really think that that is when travel can be the most potent, is when we see an alternative vision of what success, quote unquote, success could look like.
Mm. And I was curious, I mean, you mentioned you were drawn to that more adventurous side, I suppose. Why do you think that was such a draw card for you, even at the beginning of your career?
I think it was a draw card because it was not my natural inclination. I actually grew up in the Sydney, in the North Shore. I was very kind of protected. I was afraid of absolutely everything. I was afraid of animals. I was afraid of sports. I was afraid of the ocean. I was afraid of so many things. And then I actually developed quite a lot of anxiety in my late teens. And part of my journey with healing that, although it's never really finished, it's always with you, but you learn to work with it, was really about kind of looking those fears in the face and really allowing them to be part of my life. And so that really involved kind of pushing myself a little bit further with these experiences and doing the things that really scared me. Because I think we all are aware that when we do those things and when we push ourselves in that way, it can be so expansive. And it was so expansive for me. I found myself doing things that I could never have dreamed of before. And people kept thinking, oh, you must be so brave. Did you grow up traveling a lot and all these sorts of things? And it was exact opposite. Right. It was really a way of kind of changing the script that I had in my head until then.
So you had really built this very successful career for yourself. I mean, you got into it, I guess, in your mid-20s, and over a period of about a decade, you were writing for some of the biggest publications in the country. But in 2019, you hit a bit of a turning point in your career on a trip to the Arctic, and you actually opened with this story in your new book, The Mindful Traveller. So can you tell us a bit about what happened on that trip and how it changed things for you?
Yes, so I was on an assignment to a place called Churchill in the Canadian Arctic, and it's called the polar bear capital of the world. And in the summer season, there's 900 or so polar bears, and there's a human population of 800. So you can imagine the kind of situations that occur because of that. There's polar bears walking through town. Well, when you're there at night, you have to turn corners in a very specific way so you don't come face to face with a polar bear.
Oh, wow.
It's quite amazing, but but there's also these really high populations of beautiful beluga whales. It's an extraordinary place. And on that trip, I came face to face, and I'm talking like looking in the eyes of a few polar bears, and that experience was so moving. I mean, all of us who were in that situation were in tears. It was, you know, the full goosebumps, the tears, all of that. And then on the same day, we're at this education center and learning about how climate change and global warming are really impacting the populations of those bears, and how their feeding seasons are shortened because of the melting of the ice. So their seal feeding season, which impacts their breeding, which of course leads to a decline in their population, and all of the other things that we learned about climate change during that week. I mean, there were things that I had already been aware of, but, you know, I think as humans, we really respond to those issues that are in close proximity to us. And so when you are face to face with something like that, it changes you. And that is the power of travel, of course. And I remember sitting at the airport after that trip on the way home and kind of looking around at just thousands of people jumping on thousands of planes and thinking about my life and how I was encouraging people to do that, and thinking, this is a huge part of the problem. And I don't know that I can happily be part of this anymore. And I just had that penny drop moment where I thought, I've got to do everything differently. And it was just, it was bringing the issue to life, and it was then inside my body. And when I got home, I just thought, okay, I have to change everything. And I wrote to my editors and I said, okay, I need some time off. I really need to figure out what I'm doing and why. And then, of course, got offered some of the most tantalizing assignments that I had been offered in my career. But I just had to stay true to that, because when you are visited by that kind of strong intuitive knowing that it is time to change things, I think it's so important to listen to it, because it will just keep coming back until you are ready to take action. So that was the moment.
In the book, you sort of describe going through quite a period of turmoil and soul searching after having this realization about the impact of the travel industry, your own carbon footprint, I guess, like which you, I know you've described as, you know, much higher than the average person because you were traveling so frequently. But at the same time, I'm sure this idea of giving up a career in travel altogether was not something that you would easily entertain. So can you describe what you went through in that reevaluation period and how you did decide on what to do next?
Yeah, so it was a really reflective period because every single thing that we do as human beings, of course, impacts the climate. Mm-hmm. And it just hit home in such a way that every single thing I was doing, turning on the washing machine or getting in the car or eating a meal, all of that has an impact. Every piece of clothing you put on has an impact. And when you really understand that and feel the weight of that, I think it's really quite hard to metabolize and to continue on business as usual. I just felt that I couldn't. And it was like I had had a veil over my eyes and I pulled it away and I just couldn't unsee it. Yeah. And it really took me down for a while. And I was just feeling this immense guilt and also a kind of hopelessness because I felt, okay, there's how many of us, you know, more than 8 billion of us on the planet, and we're all having this impact. How do we turn this ship around? And I think that's really what led to the action, because I realized if I sit in this hopelessness, this is not going to be beneficial for anybody. And so I thought, I've got to do something about it, because even if me stopping traveling in that way was not going to have a huge impact in the grand scheme of things, because we all know how that feels, you know, you think, oh, how's this one little saying no to one reusable, not a non-reusable cup, how's that going to impact anything? But it all has an impact, and we have to remember that. And so taking action really shifted things again, because I felt very much more empowered. I felt that I was creating a kind of pathway forward in my own head and for other people. And that's really something useful for anybody who is feeling this way, is to do something about it. And we all have the ability to do something. That's the thing. Even if we think we don't, because a lot of us do feel powerless in the face of this. But, you know, there's that meme that's like, it's just one plastic straw, ... said 8 billion people. And then you see the gigantic mountain of that. So even those tiny little changes, everything makes a difference.
And so what were the actions that you took from a career perspective? Because you did go on to write some books in the sustainable travel space or the conscious travel space. So was that where you decided to channel your energy into this sort of new career direction?
Yeah, it was, because actually at that point I looked for a resource on how to do this, because I thought, I'm always going to travel. This is my career. This is how I make money. This is what brings so many of us to life. This is also what accounts for 1 in 10 jobs around the world. It wasn't a situation where it was a let's never do this again. It was, let's do this in a way that is really beneficial, but how? So couldn't find the resource, and then I had the idea of, I need to write about this and create that resource, and in that way learn about it and share it. And so I had already written a book about creativity at that point, and so I approached that same publisher and I said, what do you think about this idea? I sort of made it sound as though I had fully formulated it in my mind, which I hadn't. And then they said, yeah, we love it. Can you deliver it in 3 months? So it was this real whirlwind of learning. And I just became so immersed in all of it. And I was so hungry for that information. And, you know, that book was called Go Lightly. And I filled it with, you know, every kind of tool that I could find. So every tip from taking less single-use plastics to packing less, all those small things, offsetting your carbon emissions from your travel, to the much bigger things about, you know, how to actually give back to local communities, how to really interact with communities in a way that is reciprocal. So small picture, big picture. And I also interviewed some incredible eco-adventurers. So one of those was Céline Cousteau, who is an amazing conservationist and filmmaker and the granddaughter of the famous explorer Jacques Cousteau. She's an incredible woman. If people are not aware of who she is, they should look her up. She's very inspiring. And she told a story in that book that I think really highlights the whole kind of the mindset that I really adopted after that, and that I think it could be just so beneficial for all of us moving into the future. So it was a story about a chief in an Amazonian village, and he pointed to a tree and he said, "One day that tree will make a great canoe. Not for me, not for my son, not for my grandson, maybe for my grandson's son, or maybe his grandson." And she said, you know, we used to think several generations ahead and we need to return to that.
Yeah.
And it's just so true. I mean, that is that Indigenous mindset that finally we are recognizing Indigenous wisdom, understanding that that's the kind of mindset that we all need to adopt, where we're not just thinking about ourselves and what we can gain. It's that long pathway of time and how do we create an ecosystem that is robust and abundant for centuries ahead.
Yeah. Wow, I love that. And so what did that shift mean for your broader career? So you wrote the book, you've written another book since then, but in terms of, you know, you said you were starting to say no to the more glamorous travel assignments. I mean, did work completely dry up then, or what sort of impact did it have?
Yes, it did dry up for a while, which was lucky that I was working on a book, because you do get a small advance when you write a book that you can live on. So yeah, on a practical level, I had that. And so I was saying no to things like, you know, what was it, 15-day private jet trip around Africa. And I thought, okay, huge carbon emissions, probably very unlikely to even interact with a local. Let's say no to that sort of thing. And then I was kind of coming to terms with, okay, what would be a yes? All right, that overland trip in the Starnes, you know, that I had always wanted to do. I thought maybe that's a yes and I can spend a couple of months there, really spend a long period of time, gather up stories, and then come home and, you know, spend the next 6 months to a year writing those, as opposed to all these short, sharp trips back and forth. And just as I had kind of made that decision, I felt equipped and ready to go, the pandemic hit. And then it was, okay, here we are, all recognizing two things, one of which was, if we all slow down, the world could be a much more beautiful place. So during that time, I'm sure we all remember all the emissions dropping so drastically. Yes. People in the Himalayas in India being able to see the Himalayas for the first time in 30 years, clearly, because of the lack of pollution. People hearing bird song in cities where they hadn't heard it in decades. All those sorts of things. And so there was that real idea that travel could become, well, the pandemic, sorry, could become a portal into this kind of greener travel world. And there was so much talk about that at that time, and I thought, fantastic, we're finally having these conversations. And there was a real momentum during that time. And then of course it has gone a bit backwards since then, because then the travel world opened and everybody was just so cooped up and desperate to go out there. And, you know, equally at that time we recognized that so many people no longer could earn money from the travel industry, and that was hugely detrimental for people. So there were two sides. We recognized both the necessity of it, but also that if we did it in a new and better way, which is less about just going, let's just get on the cheapest flight to fly and flop somewhere. Let's actually be really, really intentional about this. Let's go somewhere that actually means something to us, where we really want to learn something, where we can give back in some way, where we can make sure as many of our travel dollars land in local pockets as possible. But just getting clear on where we're going and why.
Yeah, I like this idea of being more intentional and thinking about, you know, the way you travel and doing it differently. I mean, I know you had a lot of people following you who were probably more swept up in your earlier career of the more glamorous destinations. I mean, just coming back to that impact on your career, did you feel that shift in message? Did people have a reaction to that?
They did. Right. I definitely had, you know, followers drop off, but at the same time, other ones come on board who were more passionate about sustainability and those sorts of things. I had, you know, story ideas declined that editors were just like, what exactly are you talking about? You know, even now I filed a story this week on regenerative travel and there was a lot of confusion around like, so what is it? What are we talking about? And, you know, when you're deeply entrenched in something, it can seem so obvious. You think it's everywhere, but it's actually still quite a niche thing. I also had friends tell me, oh my God, you know, you make me feel so guilty now. And I thought, oh gosh, that's not my intention at all. So I felt a little bit like the Grinch who stole travel. Yeah. But the whole point is, and then I really always try to say, like, this isn't about giving anything up. This is actually about making the travel that you do so much more satisfying. Mm-hmm. So if you're not going to get on board with this idea because of the sort of give more than you take idea, because that's not for everybody and that's fine, then just think about how when you are so intentional about something, it's just so much more satisfying. You know, since I started traveling this way, I remember the trips so much more clearly because I spend longer in these places. I think about it for a lot more beforehand. Things happen that are just so much more enriching than they were before, and that's such an important thing.
I just wanted to ask you one more question on this, you know, the saying no to certain things, because I actually just wrote a piece for our website last week, I think it was, about the lure of shiny things in our career and how that can actually keep us stuck in an unfulfilled place or on an unfulfilling path. And I thought your story is such a good example of that because, you know, in order for you to make this shift, you did have to make choices and you did have to get comfortable with letting certain opportunities go. I talk about that idea in the career change course I run as well. I mean, I imagine there was quite a discomfort, especially at the start, in saying no to certain things. But how did you, I guess, get more comfortable with it? Or was it just the case that you, you know, once you were really clear on the direction you wanted to take this, it made it very easy?
Yes. Well, I think it's always that thing. I love that you touch on this in your courses because it's so important. I think it's also trusting, a deep level of trust, that when you close one door, another one will open. And it always does, particularly when you do something very purposefully, which I was doing. I was saying, okay, this is the message that I now want to share. I'm not going to stray from it. And I'm just going to stay in tune with that. And it took a little while, but now I have a lot of work precisely because I made that decision. Now I'm asked to keynote. I'm asked to write travel story. I've become that voice in the industry that talks about that thing. And so closing the doors for a little while, I'm going to say maybe it took 6 months to a year to really kind of find my feet there. And it continues to gather momentum as it goes along because these things do take time. But just trusting that when we lead with purpose, everything gets easier. And that's really something that I'm passionate about because I think the reason that a lot of us feel directionless or scared to close any doors or say no to things is because maybe we haven't found that purpose piece yet. Finding that thing that we're so passionate about that we are willing to just wait and trust that the right thing will come up. And, you know, again, Celine Cousteau comes up because she said in the interview in that book, she said, you know, we have to find that thing that wakes our warrior spirit up every day, every morning, getting really clear on that. And it becomes a practice and it's part of my personal practice where I wake up and I kind of remember, okay, these are the things that I'm hoping for, fighting for in the world. And when you lead from that place, I think it's just, it's this kind of bedrock beneath everything that you do.
Mm.
And it gets you through those hard times.
Mm. And I guess it's also having your own definition of success, right? Like, because I guess in that 6 to 12 month period that you mentioned of the transition, perhaps your income would have reduced. For a lot of people, that is still the definition of success, is a certain level of income. But I mean, I guess for you, as well as having this purpose, what do you now see as your definition of a successful life and career?
I love that question. And I think it's essential for all of us to answer it. And there's no right answer, by the way, you know, so if somebody's idea of success is a gigantic bank account, amazing. But get clear on that and know that it is your definition,
yes,
not just the one that society has given to you, because it's easy to just follow along. We live in a capitalist society. That's the message that's out there. But is it your idea or somebody else's? And so for me, success means a life rich in connection. So I love connecting with people and with the natural world. So a life that has enough space and time to be outside in nature a lot. The other one is freedom. So has my career got enough movability so that when I feel that kind of calling come, it's up to me to make that shift? Because if I didn't have that freedom, I was lucky that I had that freedom. I was a freelancer. I could make that call. Had I been still in a corporation like I was for all of those years, I was there for 6 years in-house, it was not as easy to make that call. It was virtually impossible. So I built a life with that freedom at its core so that I could do that. And I continue to do that. I think it's really important as somebody who is self-employed to really be able to shift and move with things that feel right, that are kind of calling to you more. I've woven some things in over the last couple of years in terms of, you know, running workshops and mentoring and doing those things aside from just writing that just felt right. I didn't even intentionally set it up that way. The things that came to me and I went, that feels really good. All right, let's move some of that in. And when you have freedom, you can really do that.
Well, speaking of freedom, you're about to move to the Himalayas for 6 months, which sounds like quite the adventure. So can you tell us a bit about what you're going to be doing over there and how does that fit in with your conscious travel principles?
Ah, yes. Well, so this was an interesting one. I was asked by World Expeditions to run a trek that is leaving in 3 weeks from today. I have 10 beautiful women who I will be leading. It's essentially the Everest Base Camp trek, but with a real mindfulness angle. So there will be, you know, some walking in silence. There will be a lot of reflection, journaling, those sorts of things. But also they're an incredibly ethical company. So there's, you know, eco camps, there's visiting a regenerative women's farming project. There's, you know, really looking at Sherpa culture and doing all of those things that I talk so much about. So really bringing those ideas to life. And then when that trip booked out, they said, will you do another one in September? And I thought, well, this kind of runs contrary to my idea of not rushing around the world so much. So then my husband and I were on a bushwalk one day and I said, what if we just stayed in between those two treks? And the what if question is such a powerful one that I think we could all be asking a lot more. And we had a million reasons why it wouldn't work. You know, we don't have children, but we do have a 45 kilo dog and a house, and my husband has a company and all these things. So it seemed mad, but then we just wrote down all of those things that might be in the way. And one by one, we systematically went, can we solve this? Can we solve this? Can we solve this?
Right.
And we did. And so we've made it happen. The whole idea is to really move back into that awe and wonder that I think is critical also to success and living a good life, finding that again, because, you know, it's easy for all of us to kind of move into this rhythm that can start to feel very tiresome after a while.
Yes.
And, you know, can we sink into the mystery of that place? I really want to be walking the talk. One of the biggest things that I talk about is that putting money directly into local communities and making sure that it stays there, because there's a figure in tourism, it's an 85% of our travel dollars leak out of host destinations and into the pockets of multinational corporations. So we'll really be looking for those small locally owned businesses to support, and really just following our noses in terms of what we're interested in, what really lights us up. I mean, there's a trip to Bhutan that's kind of glimmering on the horizon, because that is a carbon negative country that runs on gross national happiness, not gross domestic product. And so I'm fascinated as to what life looks like in a society like that. You know, is that as utopian as it sounds? Really looking at all of those things that you talked about before. What is success? What is happiness? So that's the impetus behind all of that.
So Nina, I just have a few final questions for you to give some tips to our listeners today. So if someone listening is thinking about making a change in their career, maybe wanting to do something more purposeful or joyful, what tips do you have for them?
I think just do it. That sounds so simple, but my first book about creative living was profiling 26 creatives from around the world who'd made a living doing what they love, who'd done exactly what you were asking about. And so many of them, their advice was that. They said, you know, you learn the most about the thing by just doing the thing. Yes. And of course, let's not be naive. You do have to build up a bit of a nest egg to soften that. You do have to do your research, all of those things. But often it is not until you do the thing that you learn whether you actually want to do it or not. So you might think, like one of the guys in that book, he said, oh, you know, I had this dream. I was in the corporate world, but I wanted to create a pickle company. When he started the pickle company, that he'd thought about for years, he realized, I don't like making pickles every day. I don't like the house smelling like pickles. It's not a pickle company. And then he did another thing with restoring furniture, realized he didn't really like that either. And then the third attempt, he landed on a floristry business that is now flourishing. Sometimes it takes a few attempts. Sometimes it really, but you need to kind of embody it. It can't just be this idea in your head that you're saying, oh, one day, you've just got to go out and do it.
Yes, I hammer that point when I'm working with people, because people get so, so stuck just trying to do the thinking. You know, people try and think their way to a new career. And it's like, honestly, you just, if something is, you know, calling to you, it doesn't, you may not even have any perception of it as a career at that point. But if there's something that you're curious about or interested in, before you quit your job, before you take the big leap, just try it in whatever way you can to understand what it feels like in action, because that is the key, really, to know whether this is what you want. But people, it sounds, and it's so simple in a sense, but people just don't do it.
It's so simple. And Jackie, just a quick thing on that, here's a really practical thing for people to do that I'm often telling people that I mentor, which is try just creating a really simple website about the thing that you're thinking about. And people often say, oh, but it's too early and I don't know exactly what it is. And I say, yes, but you'll find out by having to write a 100-word bio about what it is that you're doing and who you are, and selecting even one image for that website. That process will tell you so much. Yeah. And the other thing I would say is just putting purpose again at the base of it all. What is the purpose? What do you want to give to the world? When we get clear on that, anything is possible.
And so what do you think then? I mean, we know there's lots of things that can hold people back from making that change. As I just said, people often tend to sit there and think about it but not take action. I mean, sometimes there can be an external barrier to making that change. Often it's, you know, your own self-doubt. I mean, what would you say is the biggest barrier that you had to overcome to make your career change?
Yes, I think that it's often about silencing the voices of dissent, as I like to call them. And there are many. They can come in the form of our loved ones. They can come in the form of concerned members of society thinking that it's unsafe to live in this way. And again, let's just have the caveat of there are some very real concerns that people have and that we all should have. We live in a material world. We need to make sure that we are, you know, supported in some way financially. But I think if you really want to make something happen and you are clear on what that thing is, nothing can stop you. And so it's just really tuning into that voice that is your voice and not allowing those other voices in. And this is why I'm such an avid fan of journaling, because I do it every single morning without fail, as per Julia Cameron's way, the 20 minutes without stopping every morning. Yes. I teach it now. I wrote journaling cards on it because I just think it's such a perfect way to stay in tune with that voice that is just yours. And, you know, listeners can try this, like try writing about what is my purpose, what is really driving me every morning for a month, and see how that galvanizes you, see how that gets that across the line, because you that's such a, to amplify your voice is to quieten those other voices.
I love that. Okay. And so what is the best part about your work life now?
I would say that it's all about the freedom and the flexibility that it brings me. You know, I can work from anywhere. I can bring my creativity to the table. It's this real kind of flow state that I have finally found after all of this time. And also the fact that I get to talk about the things that I'm really passionate about and feel as though in some small way, maybe I'm moving the needle. I think that's a really big part of it too, feeling that you are contributing in some way.
And lastly, if people want to find out more about you and your sustainable travel adventures or your workshops, where's the best place to connect with you?
Instagram's probably the best. So it's at Nina_Karnikovsky. And maybe you can put a note in the show notes because it's a tricky name. And then it's ninakarnikovsky.com is my website.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for your time today, Nina. I've really loved chatting with you.
Thank you, Jackie. I loved it too.
Thanks for joining me for this episode of What She Did Next. You can find all of the details about today's guest in our show notes. And if you're thinking about making a career change of your own, then you might want to check out our new online courses or subscribe to our newsletter at whatshedidnext.com.au. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn at What She Did Next Podcast. What She Did Next is produced and hosted by me, Jackie Uwe, with audio production on this episode by Browntree Productions. Thanks for listening.